Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Highly Functional. This is Breanne Showman, and I am joined today by Benjamin Bunn, owner of Cigar City CrossFit in Tampa, Florida. He has a lot of really cool things going on at his gym in order to help create more highly functional individuals. I think you will get a lot of great information out of this, regardless if you are an athlete, a coach, or a clinician. So let's tune in. Ben, thank you for joining me today. How are you?
I'm well. Thank you for asking. How are you?
I'm awesome. I did my 5 a.m. workout as normal today, so I am ready to go.
Oh, I certainly do not wake up at that time anymore.
I'm all about the 5 a.m. crew. It's crazy. I don't have to, but I absolutely love it.
Yeah. Those are some stone cold killers in the morning classes. They're dedicated.
Yes, absolutely. Well, thank you so much for joining me. I've heard a lot about you and Cigar City CrossFit from a colleague of mine. So I'm super excited to get you on here and just find out more about what you are doing with your members in order to, one, keep them as healthy as possible, keep them in your box. But also, I'm really excited to dive into also the special populations you work with and just getting into the fact that we don't have to be 100% functional in order to be able to be a functional human or be a CrossFit athlete. So let's just start with, just tell us about Cigar City CrossFit and kind of what your vision and your mission is with your members there.
So Cigar City CrossFit is not too unlike any other CrossFit gym that you might stumble across in some of these different sprawling kind of medium to large size cities, right? Tampa is, you know, similar in size to like Phoenix or Nashville, places like this. We opened 3 years ago. We opened into a competitive market. We had probably 10 to 15 gyms that were inside of a 10-mile radius. That being said, you know, there's about 385,000 people in Tampa. As I alluded to previously, where I kind of said it was kind of a mid to large size city. In terms of whether or not I think the market was or is saturated, anybody that thinks that the market is saturated has never walked through the bread aisle in a grocery store, if that makes any kind of sense. So we opened up our gym, and one of the things that we take very seriously inside our organization is, one, we know that as coaches and as owners, we have to have a radical adherence to the noble cause, right? We have to understand that first and foremost, we provide a lifeboat to people that are essentially out there in the world wading through a sea of kind of like toxic lifestyles, chronic disease, chronic pain, metabolic disease, and essentially, you know, medical issues that come about as a result of sedentary lifestyles and poor nutrition. And so that's kind of the thing that we think of first and foremost. We're that lifeboat, right? And we're there so that, you know, people can jump on board and save themselves and maybe even reverse some of the damage that they've already done. And then after that, we kind of consider ourselves to just be a really good strength and conditioning facility. And that's really important to us. I mean, we spend a lot of time expanding our own professional education. All of our coaches have taken a lot of extra education, whether it be a CrossFit course, OPEC certifications, training think tank modules, whatever they can kind of get their hands on. But generally speaking, all the people on the staff, all of my coaches on my staff are voracious consumers of additional training and professional development when it comes to making themselves better coaches. So as an organization, we take it really seriously, and it's taken us a long time to kind of figure out exactly how we fit into the space. But at the end of the day, we kind of ended up coming full circle and realized that, brass tacks at the end of the day, we kind of fit that model of the old school CrossFit gym, CrossFit.com. We have a workout of the day. We have a very carefully delineated warm-up. We try and teach you some skills. And then we make sure that you have, a very well-planned-out, well-thought-out workout of the day. And generally speaking, it involves intense exercise. And then we cool you down, and then we send you back out into the world.
Awesome. I want to get right into kind of that lifeboat concept and these people who have these health issues, know they need to do something about it, and are scared to enter the CrossFit realm because they, you know, they see the games on TV or they talk to CrossFit athletes and they just think that they have to be in shape in order to even start CrossFit. So how do, as coaches or as the scared person even, like, how do we enter this realm of getting them in there, letting and helping them understand that this is safe, it's good for them, and we can scale and modify, because they don't see that through talking to other people a lot of times?
That's difficult, and that's been an ongoing challenge. And I think, you know, the writing is on the wall in terms of CrossFit.com or CrossFit HQ changing the direction by which they promote themselves and by what they're focusing on. And I think previously, all you saw when you saw CrossFit were games athletes. You saw the absolute top 1%. And that's very intimidating for people, you know, and if, you know, the only time that you ever saw anybody taking a job was when it was at the Olympics and for the marathon event, you would not believe that running was accessible either. So now CrossFit HQ has kind of flipped that model on its head, and it's focusing on people that do have chronic disease or the elderly, or, you know, the morbidly obese, all these people that actually need CrossFit. And what's kind of funny about this is I have this discussion often with new members, you know, and I say, hey, listen, we spend a lot of time talking about inclusivity in the gym. As a matter of fact, a lot of gyms spend a lot of time talking about inclusivity. And the irony there is usually it's the opposite of inclusivity. If you walk into a Crunch Fitness and you're severely overweight, and you've never been into that gym before, and you don't have the right kind of apparel, water bottle, or headphones, or you just don't look like you know what you're doing, you will be treated like a pariah, right? You will be made to feel uncomfortable. And in short order, you will probably never go to that place again and continue to pay the $14 to $100 a month for a membership that you do not utilize. Because the expectation for Crunch Fitness, or for a lot of gyms, and in some cases even CrossFit gyms, is that you have to be fit in order to walk through the front door, which is crazy. It's like saying only healthy people should be able to walk into a hospital. That's also bonkers. Sick people walk into hospitals. People who need treatment walk into hospitals. CrossFit gyms are the exact same way. People that need fitness, people that need to get better, people that are fighting chronic disease, these are the people that need to walk through our front doors. And by far and wide, they're representative of the population at large, not the 1% or the 1% of the 1% that you see represented in the CrossFit games. So we do our best to control our messaging as an organization. Like, you know, we try and make sure that when we, you know, put pictures on Instagram or provide testimonials, or, you know, when we focus on specific athletes inside the gym, we make sure that it's like our actual demographic, right? And that can be hard to do because, you know, when you see somebody deadlifting 500 pounds, it's hard not to take a picture of that. It's hard not to praise that individual for what is very much an incredible feat of strength. But at the same time, you know, we do our best to make sure that we're praising somebody who gets their first pull-up, because we know at the end of the day, that's representative of the gym more so than the person with a 500-pound deadlift.
Absolutely. So when these people come into the gym, as coaches, what are you guys doing, knowing that they have these different medical conditions? What are you guys doing as a risk mitigation safety factor to kind of oversee these people?
Well, you know, used to, we actually had a functional movement screen. We would give them through, we'd put everybody through the FMS, just kind of like the gold standard for movement. Anybody who's an occupational therapist or a doctor of physical therapy or went to school for exercise physiology has put somebody through a functional movement screen. But, you know, after a while, we would put everybody through the functional movement screen. You know, there's different, and for anybody that's not familiar with that, it's essentially, you know, there's this kind of long, you know, polycarbonate like plastic ruler and a PVC pipe and a band, and you know, essentially you're seeing if you can balance, you know, on all fours with one arm up or one arm and one leg. There's a test where you, you know, pull your arm across the side of your body, grab the opposite shoulder, and then push on the elbow to see if you feel tension or discomfort in your shoulder. If you do, it's indicative that you have a shoulder injury. But, you know, I was in going through the functional movement screen and like seeing what some of the recommended scaling options were for individuals that experience shoulder pain for that test that I was just talking about where you reach across shoulders. It says, don't do physical activity that involves the shoulder. And I was like, awesome. So, if you own a Chevrolet truck, you should also not open and close your door. No, or you can go ahead and mix taking shops to the grocery store or Home Depot. If you have a child, I guess don't hold it. You know what I mean? And it occurred to me that there was something wrong there, right? It's like all of a sudden we're saying, hey, you have an injury, which everybody over the age of 27 who's been active has probably a torn labrum and probably a lower back issue, regardless of the sport that they have participated in, or if any at all. And so now all of a sudden, our recommendation to an individual that feels pain is to create a more sedentary lifestyle. That's bonkers, you know, that's crazy. And anybody that's doing that, you know, I mean, I don't want to call them a supervillain or something like that, but unfortunately that's ignorant and wrong in my opinion. So for us, we kind of balled up the functional movement screen, tossed it out. But what we do have is an academy program. And it's 5 sessions in length. On the first 4 sessions, all we go over is general movement, things that you would encounter on the floor. And then the last session, we actually just sit down and we only talk to them about nutrition. We essentially kind of go over some different things, factual information, stuff that you might run into in an exercise physiology book. Like, hey, this is, you know, these are what calories are. These are what, you know, macronutrients are. These are what micronutrients are. And then briefly talk about supplements, because we found that when speaking with athletes, the biggest piece of friction that they encounter outside the gym is accountability and nutrition. So accountability, all we can do is open the doors every day. But for nutrition, we thought we'd give them a good solid block of instruction. After those 5 sessions, we go ahead and kind of drop them into group classes. But I will say this, in terms, you know, of how we conduct ourselves on the floor, you know, all my coaches wear a shirt that says coach. They address athletes as athletes. And we all kind of coach the exact same way. So there's a definitive standard inside the organization. And then it's actually delineated on a coach's rubric, you know, that has, I mean, I think over, I want to say it has between 13 and 15 different dimensions by which we grade the individual, all the way from ensuring that they're managing time well to if they had them sign into class, made announcements, to, you know, where they were relentlessly checking form, posture, and efficacy for individuals on the floor, right? And so, you know, and I quarterly take out that rubric, sit down in a lawn chair right in the middle of class, and I grade that coach. I also drop in at least once a month unannounced. So, you know, we're consistently, you know, holding our coaches to that standard. We have that academy program that's designed to onboard individuals that are sedentary or might not have any experience with CrossFit. But I think, you know, for us, the biggest kind of step that we take or the way that we mitigate risk is by having active coaches on the floor. My coaches aren't passive. It's not just like some guy shirtless and a pair of flip-flops eating a banana passively coaching class. Hey guys, knock out the warm up and then meet me back at the whiteboard. Like, our coaches are on top of you, you know, from the first minute all the way to the 59th minute. And that's just the way that it is. And that's the way that the CrossFit model was originally created. And anybody that's running class some other kind of way, I'm sure you might have a CrossFit gym, you just aren't running CrossFit classes. You just don't know it because nobody that knows better has told you.
Yeah, absolutely. So I'm curious, because I know we all deal with it as coaches and as a clinician for myself, that we get those people who want to work out, but they're told by their doctors that they shouldn't squat or shouldn't deadlift or shouldn't lift overhead or whatever it is. How do you go about kind of breaking down those beliefs with those athletes?
You know, that's hard. That's been really difficult, because I can't sit there and just be like, your physician's stupid. And that's what I want to do. I want to be like,
I want to.
Yeah, I want to be like, your physician's stupid, you know? Like your primary healthcare provider gets 15 minutes with you once a quarter, and all he knows about you is what he sees on that chart. You know what I'm saying? And it's difficult, you know, because I spend so much time fixing movement, identifying people that have gross, you know, issues, and then working so diligently to fix them. And then all of a sudden they'll like have a doctor's appointment and they're like, yo, you know, my doctor told me, because I'm having low back, I need to start taking a Pilates class because that'll put my back into hyperextension and hurt me worse. You know what I'm saying? Or something, right? I'm like, oh my God, like, you know, but here's the hard truth. The Pilates, CrossFit, basketball, probably not basketball, actually probably something a little bit more low impact, you know, but you know, baseball, they all have the same rate of injury as one another. You know, exercise, all sports for the most part just have the exact same rate of injury, with the exception of like women's soccer, football, and long distance running. Those people are probably rocking like an 87% injury rate or something crazy like that. But everybody else gets injured just the same. You're just as likely to be injured doing a clean and jerk as you are playing ultimate frisbee. And in my experience, it seems like people get hurt more often playing ultimate frisbee. So, you know, what we do as an organization to kind of mitigate kind of some of the advice that folks are getting from their physicians on occasion is, you know, we offer PT sessions, right? And we offer specifically corrective exercise sessions. So we have two coaches, we have a very explicit background in corrective exercise. And we link them up with those individuals for either a 30 or 60 minute session. And it's personal training, which is good for my coach and it's good for the athlete. And then we kind of give them take home work. We're like, hey, listen, you can work on this stuff before and after class. And if you feel comfortable, you know, after you've worked this for a couple of weeks, we can get you right back into group and you're feeling better again. So we offer corrective exercise inside the organization, first and foremost. And then secondly, the other thing I typically say is, hey, also everything is infinitely scalable. I remember one time I had an athlete who sent me an email. I think the individual wanted to cancel his membership, but just like didn't know how to be like, hey, I just don't want to come to the gym anymore because it's like, it's not a priority for me. So I need to cancel my membership. Didn't say that. Instead, he was like, hey, I fell off my bike and I hurt my shoulder. And I was like, well, I've fallen off a lot of bikes and that's not how that works, brother. Like, you know what I mean? But and I was like, I'm sure you had a catastrophic bike accident. Your shoulders are what's funny because we just recently did have an athlete who actually wasn't a terrible bike accident and for real can't come to the gym because of that. But this was like a while ago, right? And I was like, hey, no problem. But you know, my two cents on that is it's like, hey, listen, like I got this guy over here. He is a quadriplegic. You know what I'm saying? Like he's got so many injuries. I'm sure he has a shoulder injury. I'm sure he's got something wrong with his shoulder, like a torn rotator cuff, a full thickness tear, something that would be debilitating for most people. But it's just so low on the list of things that's wrong with him because, you know, he's paralyzed that like he doesn't care. You know what I mean? And this individual works around that. And so I tell people, hey, listen, I've got a 67-year-old with cervical spine disorder. I got a 54-year-old who's an above-the-knee amputee. I've got a 24-year-old who's a partial quadriplegic, right? I've got a lot of athletes with a lot of different limitations, but we make it work for them in class no matter what. And the bottom line is we can make it work for you too, even if you quote unquote hurt your shoulder in a bike accident.
Yeah, definitely. And I think that's the biggest thing to point out. And it's one of the reasons I absolutely love the gym I train at, because they make a point like, you know what, if this is injured, you're still showing up every day. I still remember we had the same time, one guy with a pec tear, the other guy, another girl with a crush injury in her hand. And like, they were working out side by side. They were opposite arms. I'm like, we just need to make one of like, put you together and make one of you to work out. Yeah. But it's like, we can still figure out things to do when people are injured, whether it's like completely can't use a limb or just need to like go lighter on that limb or whatever it is. And it's definitely not a reason to, you know, put a membership on hold just because of that.
Yeah. And I understand. And people, when they become injured, they have the propensity to want to, you know, to want to not make it worse. And I don't blame that. Right. But for me, like as a, for instance, I have, two torn rotator cuffs right now. I need my left shoulder needs to be like reconstructed, and I need like to have my knee operated on as well. You know, I've been working closely with a PT and a DPT to make sure that I'm doing everything that I need to do to mitigate the risk of further injury. I know there's absolutely some things that I cannot do. There's some things where I can kind of walk that fine line. But at the end of the day, like for me, and people are like, damn, like, why are you still exercising even though you're injured? And I'm like, why are you still grocery shopping? You know what I'm saying? Like, look, I'm not going to stop what is a normative part of my life now just because I have an injury. I'm going to continue to work around it so that I can still have, you know, what for me is a enjoyable and fulfilling life. And for me, exercise is a big part of that. So I'll continue to figure out ways to work around it. I'll work diligently with my DPT and PT to make sure I know what I should and should not be doing. And then occasionally I stop what I'm doing and I ask coaches in my own gym, you know, whether they're weightlifting or CES person or nutrition person, hey, you know, what are your thoughts on this? This is my mechanism of injury. Your specialty is weightlifting. What are your thoughts on like removing all squats from my programming and I can just do everything power? Will I still be able to compete in this meet? And like the answer is yes. You know, same thing. If somebody one day rolls up into, you know, on you with a wheelchair or they're in a wheelchair, they're a seated athlete and says, hey, I can't do X, Y, Z, but I want to be in this conversation or I want to be, you know, in this competition, you know, I dare you to tell that person no. You know what I'm saying? I dare you. You know what I mean? You're going to figure it out. As a coach, you'll figure it out. You're going to figure out for a way for that person to participate. You know, the flip side of that is for athletes out there, I would also challenge you to figure out a way to participate, even if you do have an injury, you know?
Well, I think a big thing to point out too is, you know, just as well, like for most things, rest is not the answer. Like at times full rest is, but most injuries, like, just sitting around and hoping it's going to get better is not going to solve the problem. Like, and so our bodies are made to move. And the more we just stop working out because something is injured, the worse things are just going to go overall.
Yeah. Yeah. Unfortunately, and not everybody realizes that, right? Like, you know, when a doctor, and then that being said, I don't ever recall a time where I've had an orthopedic surgeon, and I've had a lot of surgeries, where I've had an orthopedic surgeon stare me dead in the face and said, hey, you know, the best way for you to get better is to not do anything. Do no physical activity. It just hasn't happened to me, you know. No orthopedic surgeon has ever given that to me as a piece of advice. Have they said, hey, you can't run, or hey, you should not squat, or hey, I recommend you not put anything overhead? For sure. The only time I've been given that advice was in the 6-week period immediately after I had an extremely invasive surgery. Then they told me to do nothing. That's the only time I've ever been given that advice. Otherwise, they actually sent me to a DPT or to a PT who gave me prescriptive movement. You know what I'm saying? Not only did they give me movement, they gave me movement that was so specific in nature that I considered it to be prescriptive, like medicine. You know, spoiler alert, right? Movement's medicine. I think everybody's going to figure it out. It's probably going to be like a 3 to 5 year curve. I'll probably go back and listen to this, you know what I'm saying? But in the future, probably people are just going to be given a little pill bottle and there's not going to be anything in it. It's just going to say burpees on the front of it.
That'd be awesome.
Yeah, seriously.
So what do you do? I'm curious, with your programming, do you program any accessory work or anything like that in order to kind of decrease the risk of injuries with your healthy athletes?
For sure. Yeah. So we program like CrossFit.com. So there's been, and I mean that, you know, I mean like my coach who's currently studying for his level 3 takes care of group programming. I think most of the coaches in the gym at this point have had a shot at the programming or we've done it for a while. But he, you know, uses the same checklist that you're given in the level 2 seminar to kind of vet your programming to make sure that it's unbiased and it's constantly varied. But like, you know, we have days in the gym that are just only heavy days. Like it'll just be like, hey, today we're just working up to a heavy set of 5 deadlifts, which, you know, causes bedlam in normal gyms, you know, because, you know, the normal line of thinking is you should have a strength piece, you know, probably about 5 to 10 minutes dedicated to trying to get a muscle up, and then a 20-minute EMOM. And like, if you deviate off of that blueprint, your programming sucks. So I'm like, all right, well, that's not what our programming is like for sure. And I think it's because a lot of athletes are under the impression that more work is good work, or that fatigue or soreness, you know, equals efficacy. It most assuredly does not, you know. And typically speaking, you don't figure that out until you're over 32. And then you real quick realize that via a landslide of injuries, you know what I'm saying? But I mean, if you're out there, you know, essentially doing comp train every single day, you know, you're getting ready to be set up for a bad time later on in life, particularly if you don't have the advent of a coach, right? So for us, you know, we, no joke, inside of our programming, like, we talk about what people are going to be doing minute by minute in class. So when you are an athlete at our gym and you pop open Zen Planner, it says what you're doing from minute 0 to 15. And it talks about specifically what you're going to be doing in the warm-up, and that warm-up is sports specific. Typically speaking, we'll have a period of class where it's dedicated to rehearsals so that you can work up to that working weight and then do something that looks and feels like what the actual workout will be. Almost always we have some type of accessory work that is before or after class that will lend towards you getting better at that activity. You know, so if, you know, there's toes to bars in class, you might expect a skill of strict toes to bars. And then in the warm-up, you will most assuredly see things like knees to chest or hollow body positional work or Supermans. So everything kind of builds on itself in class, and it's definitely not drive-by braille at the gym. I've watched my coach, Mitchell, torture himself, you know, on a week-by-week basis, ensuring that he's providing good and unbiased programming. And everybody seems to be really happy with it. Every now and again, we will get like that one kind of athlete who's been doing it for about like maybe 5 or 6 years. They've seen just enough YouTube videos to feel like they have a certain amount of expertise, and they're like, hey, that's not what I need. I need to have strength, and then I need, you know, to have a rad workout that's some kind of ladder, power cleans and double unders, you know? And I'm like, all right, I get it, you know, but if that's the case, and if that makes somebody happy on their journey, I get it. And I'm not like mad at them for it, you know what I'm saying? Because there was a time and a place where that's all I wanted to do, you know. But that being the case, they're not going to get that at my gym. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How much do you educate on the importance of rest, or at least active recovery?
God, it's pretty hard. I mean, we do a lot of it. We tell people, you know, when people ask me how often they should be coming to the gym, I say 3 to 5 times a week. And I say once or twice they should be getting outside the gym and doing sport, like a kickball league or going for an hour-long walk or something like that. But having those discussions is difficult sometimes. And particularly because the individuals that need to hear that information might not want to hear it. You know what I'm saying? You know, like to tell somebody that, hey, training, you got speed wobbles and those wheels are getting ready to come off, homie. You know, for that individual that's training 6 days a week, or that's destroying themselves in the, you know, in the gym for every single workout, they don't want to hear anything about rest, and they'll catch injuries. They'll have a rough time. They'll have days where they're lifting terribly, like all this stuff. And they're like, I don't know what the hell is happening. I'm falling apart. And I was like, yo, I don't think you've rested in like 2.5 weeks, you know, except for like a day or two. That's just, you know, like if you've only rested 2 days in the last 21 days, like you're messed up. You know what I mean? Like you're messed up on the inside. Like you know what I mean? Your guts aren't running correctly. Like your shit is all messed up. But I understand that like for some people, they want to come into the gym, and that time, that hour is a time for them to feel good. And it's time where they don't have to think about their life outside the four walls of the gym. And yo, if that person has to come inside the gym and thrash themselves 6 to 7 times a week, I get it. You know what I mean? But we do our best to explain to individuals how important rest is. And then, you know, if I have people who are regularly attending group class, or maybe some of my individual design athletes who have programming that's tailored specifically to them, I do my best to recommend that they, you know, go after workouts at a recovery pace. Because I'm like, hey, I'm looking at you right now. you look like you're having a tough time on the floor. Why don't you just take this nice and easy? Or I'll program rest or recovery work or movement work into my individual design athletes program to make sure that that's what they're doing.
Yeah, I think that's important. So many people just don't want to listen to their bodies either. And just like, I know for me, if I'm feeling like, if it's a movement that I can normally crush and I'm feeling exhausted, I'm like, all right, we just need an extra rest day this week and just kind of throw that in. But so many people just want to keep grinding through that and not really listening to what their body's actually telling them they need.
Yeah, and you know, and guilty, right? Like, you're talking to somebody that needs a shoulder surgery and a knee surgery. I guarantee you I don't need those because of all the rest days I was taking. Like, I got, you know, I had my old job. I was, you know, I'm retired from the Army. Was very demanding on my body, and a lot of those are legacy injuries, right? You know, that I've just carried with me, that have finally caught up after 3 years of running a gym and you know, running around with a bunch of kids that are much younger than me trying to perform at a high level. But some of them are for sure I've given myself over the last 3 years, you know, and it's been because I've been learning what it's like as an athlete and as a coach to find balance, to strike balance between, you know, working out as a means of catharsis, you know, feels good for me. I feel good when I work out. But then also understanding long-term what's going to be best for me and my body. And striking that balance. I mean, honestly, if you figure out a way to strike that balance, if you truly understand that, you're probably a coach. Not only are you a coach, you're probably operating at a high level. You're a high level coach, right? You should be coaching D1A athletes. Then if you somehow find it or find a way by which you're able to convince your athletes to strike that same balance, I mean, yo, you've got lightning in a bottle. But, you know, let me know where that person is so I can go take it.
Right. Yeah. And full disclosure, I definitely had my years of injuries because I was not listening to what my body needed. So I learned the hard way, and now here we are.
Yeah. And, you know, and if I know I probably sound critical, like when I talk about like avatar style athletes that refuse to listen, half the time I'm just talking about myself.
You know? Right.
Sure. You know, I'm just talking about myself in third person.
Totally.
Yeah.
I want to talk about the nutrition side a little bit more. When you're educating them on nutrition up front, it's more just the like the basics. These are macros. These are, you know, calories, whatever. As you get into the nutrition coaching, kind of how in depth do you go with it? Do you go into actual like supplements for recovery, for like kind of what's your direction? What's your take on it?
So, you know, for us, we have struggled with nutrition over, you know, the 3 years that we've been open. We started offering nutrition counseling about a year and a half ago, and it was like a bit of a black box. You know, it was just like one of the coaches was doing it, and it was only that individual. Like, I want to say we charged $69 a month for it, and I didn't know what was being taught in it. You know, I mean, I couldn't have told you for the life of me what was happening. I just knew that we were doing it. But then recently, you know, I had one of my coaches, it was probably about 6-7 months ago, and she had taken on a lot of nutrition clients, and, you know, we were charging $69 a month for it. And I was like, holy shit. I was like, how many nutrition clients do you have? And she was like, you know, like 7. I was like, oh my God. I was like, okay. Everybody stop what they're doing. I was like, I need you to research whatever, you know, nutrition class, you know, or whatever nutrition certification you think you would like to get. And I was like, and then I need you to go get it. And I'm going to pay for half of it. And I'm going to make you sign a contract that says you're going to hang out with me for a whole year afterwards, you know? And then we need to up the price of our nutrition counseling so that it costs $99 instead of $69. And I'm going to give you 44% of that, right? And then I also need you to start researching software to start managing those clients once you get 15 or more. That was probably like 4 months ago. Like, she now has like 26 nutrition clients, right? Understand that. I know coaches are probably going to be listening to that, coaches and owners. She has 26 new nutrition clients who on average are paying $99 a month for that. When I say on average, I mean, that is the absolute lowest amount that they're paying, you know? So, you know, Greg Glassman said it best, CrossFit without nutrition is not CrossFit. If you are not offering some type of nutrition counseling or nutrition work inside your gym, you're one, missing an additional stream of revenue, like a tremendous, I mean, is anybody, for those, who's got an abacus out there? Who knows what 26 times 99 is? You know what I'm saying? So one, it helps the gym. Two, you know, I give a significant part of that revenue to that coach. You know what I'm saying? That individual has a survivable lifestyle from coaching group classes, individual design athletes, and nutrition clients, right? Like, this person's going to be making close to like $60,000 a year, and they're showing up to work in a bunch of athletic gear. You know what I'm saying? Like, you know, that's a nice life. That's a pretty chill lifestyle, if you ask me. But she chose to go to Precision Nutrition. That's the course that she liked. It's one of the gold standard nutrition courses that are out there. We like it because it talks a lot of just like known science. Like, hey, this is like how the body uses energy. You know, this is how many calories you burn per day. If you want to like, you know, lose weight, you need to consume less than that number. If you want to gain weight, you need to consume more than that number. If you start getting very specific about how you lose and gain, what you're losing and gaining, i.e. if you're gaining muscle, losing fat, you know, or if you have a specific timeline by which you want to lose that weight on, then we probably need to get a little bit advanced and start doing things like counting macros or tracking calories and this kind of stuff. And our nutrition counseling at the onset of when we have a new person coming to the gym, that's kind of the same stuff we talk about. Like, our, you know, we essentially are giving the broad once over the world of nutrition as it applies to science and the human body. But then once we do nutrition counseling, then we start kind of layering in things like upgrading food options, keeping accountability of what you eat on a day-to-day basis, which is tricky work because that can look like dysfunction if you're not careful. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we walk that fine line, but, you know, the individuals that we have inside the gym that have like signed up for nutrition counseling get absolutely undeniable result. Like, the results are so great. It's ridiculous. Like, every time they produce a before after photo, I'm like, oh my God, five more people are going to join the gym because of this. Cause yeah. It's like so amazing to look at. You're like, oh my God, like, this is amazing. How did this person do this?
Well, and it's crazy. Cause I actually do nutrition coaching myself, and one, just, you know, the leanness that they become, but also it's like they're hitting new PRs within like 3 to 4 weeks, both strength and speed. And it's something that most or a lot of athletes just don't realize, that when you add that nutrition component in, like, it's a game changer.
Yeah. I mean, if you sleep 9 hours a night and you eat well, like, you will be an animal. I don't know how else to say it. You know what yeah. I mean? I mean, you're unstoppable. You know what I mean?
So, yeah, like, you don't have to train anymore. You just have to eat right.
Yeah, train exactly the same amount that you are. Just like, eat more spinach and go to bed at 9, and you would be surprised. You know,
right?
It's bonkers, but that's how it works.
Yeah, definitely. Cool. We'll close this out. Just any kind of final thoughts you have for coaches out there, as far as just some like key pointers to mitigating risk during their group classes.
Yeah, you know, the thing that I would say to owners and coaches out there, and I know this is difficult because in a lot of places, you know, you might be, you know, you might have a small scale kind of garage feeling gym, or you might be some big super gym, right? You know, something that's like, you know, some 15,000 square foot, like, climate controlled, wacky thing that looks like the Onnit facility or whatever. It doesn't matter where you fall on the spectrum, right? The biggest thing that you have to do as an owner or as a head coach is set these expectations early and often for what you want your coaches to do. And you have to hold them to that expectation. But if you don't tell them what you expect, if you're not saying, hey, listen, this is the way that I want you to coach this class, and I want you to coach it like this every single time. And if you don't tell them that, they don't know, and then they won't do it, you know? So I think it's important for owners and coaches to set expectations early and hold the individuals inside your facility accountable to that standard, however you do it, whether it's regularly coaching classes, docking pay, or some weird draconian step like that. You know, you can do that, but figure out a way to hold these individuals accountable. And then also remember, you know, at the onset of this, we talked about that noble cause, right? Understand that you know, this isn't a transactional industry. You know, we're making personal relationships with people, and in some cases, those personal relationships develop into a coach-athlete relationship where you're helping them do things like defeat chronic disease, or in some cases, it can be something so very personal, like somebody's losing, you know, 30 pounds and they feel attractive again, and now, you know, they have an improved marriage. Like, you're saving marriages, you're beating chronic disease, you're doing these things that make a significant difference in individuals' lives. And, you know, I challenge you to not forget that when you're on the, I mean, because sometimes it just feels like you're just out there teaching people how to air squat over and over again. But just understand it's actually much, much more than that. What you're doing is powerful and it's important. And like I said, we are a lifeboat, you know, in a sea of chronic disease, you know, so people are treading water out there. It's just up to us to go and pick them up by the aegis. And I know it can be exhausting, but I hope everybody out there that's doing this understands that it's rewarding and good work.
Awesome. Thank you for that. Just to close it out, how can people contact you if they have any questions regarding coaching, maybe the adaptive programs, anything like that?
I can be found pretty easily through Instagram, and I'm pretty responsive to both. So they can find the gym's Instagram page at Cigar City CrossFit, all one word. Or they can find my personal Instagram. It's at coach_bunny. Bunny is spelled B-U-N-N-Y. It's play on my last name. I definitely don't have any affinity for rodents. It's just the way that you know.
Awesome. Well, Ben, thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate you getting on here and talking with me.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks for having me on.
And that concludes this episode of Highly Functional. I truly appreciate the time you spend to listen to myself and my colleagues share with you how to become highly functional individuals and how to be highly functional individuals. If you learned great information from this, I would love for you to share it with your friends and help them become highly functioning individuals as well. Until next time, go out and be highly functional.